Okay, if you'll take your seats, I'd like to get started. Okay, if everyone will take your seats, I'd like to get started. Next, we have a guest speaker and performer, Patsy Stoneman Murphy. She is the daughter of the pioneer recording artist Ernest V. Stoneman and a member of the Stoneman family of country musicians. And she has, in recent years, become the family historian because, as she says, she's afflicted with Stoneman-itis.
I'll be frank with you. I don't know what in the world I'm doing here because I'm about as dumbfounded with you all or y'all will with me when I get through because I ain't never been in anything like this before. But I'm willing to give it a try. First, I'm going to show you a slideshow that I put together in 1980 and 81. And the slideshow, the reason for it was my brother Van, my baby brother, came over and his children was with him, his two sons, who are musicians. And I said something about Daddy's recordings he did in the 20s. And the kids looked at me like I had two holes in my head besides these. And I said, "You don't know about that?" And he said, "No." I said, "Van, you ought to be ashamed not to tell your young'uns about Mommy and Daddy. Besides, if they don't know, there ain't nobody else going to know." So I got all the pictures I had gathered over the years, and I had gathered a good many. And I had a house that had an opening from all the way around to go through the dining room, back through the kitchen, back through the dining room again. And I laid all the pictures that I had gathered out in a row according to sequence of when it happened. And my husband came home off the road, and he said, "What in the world are you doing?" I said, "I'm going to show the Stonemans. So I proceeded to get slides made of all these. And I went to Roy Acuff Theater at Opryland. And I asked them, "Could I please use the theater?" And they said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to show the Stoneman family where we came from." So they said, "Okay, you can do that. You can have the show. You can have it on Halloween night. But you won't get a crowd here." I said, "Well, as long as the family comes, I guess it'll do." So I hired the sound man, the light man, and everything, you know. And I put on this show. I put the slideshow on. And after the slideshow was presented, then we did a live show. And in the audience were some of my brothers and sisters who had drove many miles to come to see their heritage. And they got up on the show stage and did a show with us. So now if you'll dim them lights, I'm going to try to give you some of the idea of what it was like. All I got to do is figure out how to work these boogers. Now it's on. See, I really didn't need you.
The song you're hearing, "The Sinking of the Titanic," was recorded September 5th, 1924. Its artist and writer was the only country singer whose career spanned the technological progress from phonograph cylinder to stereophonic LP. That recording was the beginning of a career that lasted a lifetime and a heritage that will continue to last many lifetimes. The man I'm talking about is Ernest Van Pop Stoneman. The story begins in November of 1919 when Pop married a remarkable woman, Miss Hattie Frost, and a remarkable woman she was. By the Library of Congress, she is recognized as the first lady of importance in country music because she was the first woman to achieve national recognition as a country artist. She traveled with her husband, playing and singing for over 40 years, and in doing so, they both continued their respective musical heritages. She performed as a member of several groups using various names, the Blue Ridge Cornshuckers, the Blue Ridge Runners, the Dixie Mountaineers, and with the addition of her brother and sister, was part of the original Stoneman family. She continued to perform and record throughout her life, which ended in 1976. What's gonna do with the baby? Oh, what's gonna do with the baby? Oh, during all this, she found time to carry 23 very talented children who were destined to become some of the greatest singers, musicians, and comedians the music business has ever known. If you've followed the Stonemans down through the years, you know that whenever you'd see Pop, he'd always be wearing his hat. Even though he wore it to cover up his bald spot, it quickly became his trademark. He first wore a cowboy hat, but back then, country really wasn't cool. The family was scheduled to audition for the Steve Allen Show, and knowing that Mr. Allen didn't like country music, they bought some umpire-type caps, called themselves folk singers, did the same songs they'd been doing for years, and Steve Allen loved them. Pop liked the new cap because it was so small he didn't have to take it off, even while he slept. Needless to say, the cap stayed. Through his life, Pop had to wear many different hats and was constantly changing roles as a need would arise. When times in the music business would get lean and far between, Pop would accept any kind of work to keep his family from going hungry. Here's a letter from a railroad company telling Pop when to show up for work. He also worked as a sweeper in a mill in Freeze, Virginia. Never doing anything halfway, he worked his way up and became an apprentice carpenter. He soon mastered the trade, and because of his skill, he was chosen to do the finishing work on President Roosevelt's yacht. Some years later, Pop was once again honored by the military for inventing a loading mechanism for the U.S. Naval Gun Factory, and he received this award. As you can see, Pop, too, was a very remarkable person. Even though he was unable to get a formal education, Pop was a brilliant man. In 1958, he tried out for a television game show called The Big Surprise, which was copied after another popular game show, The $64,000 Question. The format of the show had contestants choose their questions from various categories at different money levels. Pop answered every question up to the $60,000 level when they asked a question about geography, and he missed. Not bad for a man with a grade school education. He was also willing to accept new challenges within the music industry. He wrote scripts about his songs and performed them on a radio show called Irma and Esri, and further adapted them to a stage play. But the thing Pop wanted to do most was pick and sing. He made over 200 recordings under his own name, and his music became so popular, his recording company took some of these recordings, put different names on them along with a disguised picture of Pop, and sold them to other recording companies. Some of the assumed names were Uncle Ben Hawkins, Sim Harris, Uncle Jim Seney, Charlie Oakes, and Justin Winfield. Pop had been recording for 2.5 years when he came to Bristol, Tennessee for Victor Talking Machine Company. His sessions on July 25th and July 27th, 1927, brought him the honor of being the first country artist to record in the state of Tennessee. As his popularity continued to grow, he took on additional duties such as talent scout for the company and independent producer. Pop once took 3 days to help a man harvest and cure his tobacco so he could take him to Bristol to record. Pop was so impressed with the abundance of talent in that area that he asked the president of his recording company, Ralph Peer, to come to Bristol and hear the talent. While there, Mr. Peer heard and signed a then unknown group, the original Carter family. Little did Pop know that many years later, Bristol would have their own Country Music Hall of Fame and that he and Mom would be inducted into it. Of course, with all the fame comes a considerable fortune. In addition to two other houses and much land, they own this beautiful house in the mountains of Virginia, complete with indoor plumbing and electricity. And then the Depression hit, and in a few short years took away everything Pop had. All except his dreams, that is. Around this time, the firstborn children were getting old enough to learn to play and sing. Since the family was now too poor to buy instruments, Pop made them. He made guitars and banjos. But the most famous instrument he made was the whomper. It was a bass guitar with a bottom made from a drum, and it had a neck similar to one of an upright bass. He and Connie B. Gay gave it that name because that's the sound it made when it was played. Womp, womp. In June of 1924, long before there were amplifiers, Pop built in amplification into the Auto-Harp case so it would have a much louder sound. He devised a holder that held four harmonicas using a four-sided stick, a bolt, a few nails, and the shoulder strap worn by telephone operators. This holder enabled him to play his various instruments as well as the harmonicas at the same time. He also invented a finger pick that allowed him to strum in a forward and backward motion without getting it caught in the strings. A copy of the pick has been showing up at festivals for years, and a less sophisticated harmonica holder than the one Pop made is now in mass production. With all the hardships of raising a large family through the Depression, he never stopped doing the thing he loved most, which was singing and performing with his family. He spent his later years playing while seated in a chair because of arthritis. But even through the hardest of times, he would always say, the show must go on. He'd put his cap on his head, tune up his old auto harp, and the show would go on. As the younger children got old enough to perform with Pop, the oldest children branched off into groups of their own. At one time, there were four separate performing groups within the family. Pop and his Little Pebbles, the Stoneman Brothers, the Bluegrass Champs, and the Patsy Stoneman Show. Scotty Stoneman's career came into prominence during this time. He won first place at the National Fiddlers Championship for 9 consecutive years. He is still recognized today as one of the greatest fiddle players of all time, as well as a most innovative banjo player. In 1973, Scotty Stoneman died. As time went on, some of the members of the various groups wanted to leave and pursue their own lives. Those that remained consolidated into the Stoneman family. This group achieved widespread fame playing at the White House during a festival for President Roosevelt, the Smithsonian Institute, and at the same time they appeared at Constitution Hall. They taped the first country television show called Gay Time, named after CMA founding president Connie B. Gay. A few years later, they had their own nationally syndicated television show for 4 years. Country greats such as Tammy Wynette, Chet Atkins, and Glenn Campbell appeared with them. They also performed on the soundtrack for one of Disney World's biggest attractions, the Country Bear Jamboree, which Walt Disney patterned after the Stoneman family.
Howdy, folks! Welcome to the one and only original Country Bear Jamboree, presented by Pepsi Cola and Frito-Lay. Featuring a bit of Americana, our musical heritage of the past. But enough of this chit-chat, yak-yak, and flip-flam. Just refrain from hibernating. And we'll all enjoy the show, because we've got a lot to give.
A regular Liberace.
And it plays good, too.
The group was loved around the world, but they were also loved right back home in Nashville. Proof of that love came when their name was placed right next to Pop's in the Walkway of Stars in the Hall of Fame. Also a figure of Pop is in the Wax Museum. Their greatest honor came in 1967 when the Country Music Association voted them the recipient of the first Vocal Group of the Year award given by that prestigious organization. For the 4 years that followed, they were nominated in the top 5 for Instrumental Group as well as Vocal Group of the Year. But just as sure as life gives joy, many times sorrow follows just behind. In 1968, 1 year after they won the award, Pop's lingering illness confined him to a hospital where he died shortly thereafter. His memory lives on, however. This picture was taken in the Country Music Hall of Fame of Pop tuning up, of his beloved auto harp, his finger pick and hat, and the CMA award his children gave to honor their beloved father. The children also made up a memorial album of songs taken from their television show. Thus, his music will live on in the hearts of country fans everywhere. With undying dedication to the heritage given them by their father and mother, the family has vowed as long as there is a Stoneman left to sing, the show will go on and on forever.
So much. Have this thing on. If you'll turn that light off, honey, I'd appreciate it. Don't y'all sit and look at me like you expect something good. Because I'm going to pick you a tune or two. I'm going to do a song for you. You've seen the slideshow. And at the time we were doing the slideshow, we were also doing a reunion album. And because of the slideshow, because of my family, I wrote a song for the album. And if you look in there, if you saw our book, it's in the front, it's on the pages, the lyrics are on the book, the front of the book. And it's called Prayers and Pinto Beans. It kind of tells you how things work with us. You could hear the music coming from our house most any time, with a fiddle tune ringing loud and clear. The neighbors would be sitting round our porch to see the sight, but through it all you could hear our mother's prayers. Music in our lives has meant so much to us. It always helped to get us through, it seems. But I guess the things that helped us most and got us where we are were the direct results of hearing Mama's prayers. When times were getting hard and things were going bad, we always called upon the ones we knew. Then Mama'd fed our souls with the Bible and her prayers, and pinto beans and music saw us through. We helped our daddy feed us with the music that we played, and each of us tried to do our share. But I guess the most remembered things that went into our lives were the prayers and pinto beans that they supplied. From the time I can remember till the time they passed away, Mom and Dad was always by our side. But I guess the things that helped us most and got us where we are were the direct results of hearing Mama's prayers. When times were getting hard and things were going bad, we always called upon the ones we knew. Then Mama fed our souls with the Bible and her prayers, and pinto beans and music saw us through. Y'all are nice. When we would go out to play, Daddy would took us in an old 37 Chevrolet coupe that he put a back on where we could all have places to sit and tarp over it. People around town called it the covered wagon. And we rode many a freezing night with our hands hanging on to the boards back there and hoping he wouldn't hit another bump. But we always played around Washington, D.C. and Maryland area, like I said, and we had a theme song because when Mommy wasn't with us playing, she was at home waiting for us. And he recorded this many years ago, and Murphy knocked my guitar out of tune. It's called, it was, I think they first called it the Concert Garden, and then we've always referred to it as Somebody's Waiting for Me. Was in the concert garden when the fun was at its height, when all the joy and wine began to flow. At a table in a corner, a young man slowly rose, and he said, "It's getting late, boys, I must go. 'Cause somebody's waiting for me, someone who loves me, I know. For the light is shining bright in her window tonight, and there's somebody waiting there for me. Perhaps you have a sweetheart," one among them said. "Is she handsome, Jack? Pray introduce us to. If you follow me," he answered, "I will show her to you boys. She's the only sweetheart that I ever knew. Somebody's waiting for me, someone who loves me, I know. For the light is shining bright in her window tonight, and there's somebody waiting there for me." Then he took them to a cottage and pointed to a window pane, where a gray-haired lady sat with bowed down head. "She's my mother, she's my sweetheart, she's the one I meant tonight. So you see, I told the truth, boys, when I said, somebody's waiting for me, someone who loves me, I know. For the light is shining bright in her window tonight, and there's somebody waiting there for me." You know, for years, we didn't know the verses to that song because Daddy would take us out and he'd say, "Y'all just help out on the chorus." And all I ever knew for years was the chorus. And then after Daddy died, I had to learn the song, like a lot of songs I had to learn. You know, you never miss a water the yellow goes on plumb dry. But Daddy used to sing a song for us that every time Daddy would sit down with the guitar, Mommy would say, "Lord God, Ernest," that was her favorite word. My Lord, "Lord God, Ernest, them young'uns drive me crazy." But he would say, "I want to sing you a song." And this happens to be my husband's favorite. "I'm going to sing you a song about a burglar man who had started to rob a house. He peeped in the window and then he crept just as quietly as a mouse. While thinking about all the money he would get as under the bed he lay. At 9 o'clock he saw a sight that made his hair turn gray. At 9 o'clock an old maid came in. 'How tired I am,' she said, while thinking about all the money she would get, she forgot to look under the bed. She took out her teeth and her big false eye and the hair right off of her head. That burglar man had 41 fits when he peeped out from under the bed. She did not holler nor a scream at all. She was just as meek as a lamb. She said, 'Thank God my prayers are answered at last. I've got me a man.' She went to the drawer, a revolver she drew, and to this poor burglar man said, 'Young man, if you don't marry me, I will blow off the top of your head.' He looked at the teeth and the big false eye, and he saw no way to scoot. He looked at the old maid standing by and said, 'Woman, for the Lord's sake, shoot.'"
I had a laugh when I was looking over yonder. play a tune on the auto harp. The commemorative harp in honor of Daddy.
It's called the Pop Stoneman Commemorative Harp.
Naturally. It was built by Dr. George Orthy up in Pennsylvania. And inside, hey, oh, you're such a big help.
That's fine. Inside this auto harp, we took one of the 1920s records over to Quick Print and asked them could they print us a picture of the album logo. And they said, huh? So I've done everything, but I ain't never done it. But anyway, we ended up getting one. And so we put a copy of a logo from 1924 inside this auto harp. And it says it in commemorative harp, and for the first auto harp recording was done by Daddy. And if you'll notice, this has fewer bars than normal because Daddy played down here. But the owner is proud of it, and so am I. The wood, this part of the wood, came from a building that Daddy built in 1920 in Galax. The round the harp came from my front yard. It's Chinese chestnut. And it just sort of means something to all of us. It means something to me, and I'd like to play you a tune on it if I could. Can you hear it? Good. Because if you couldn't, I was going to hook up something else here. I think maybe that'll do you a song that Daddy recorded in 1927, July 25th, 1927, in Bristol, Virginia. He and Uncle Eck Dunford. Uncle Eck Dunford was my grandfather's brother-in-law, and we always called him Uncle Eck. And he and Daddy played good. He played a fiddle, and Daddy would take him with him wherever he went. In fact, he's the one that Daddy helped put his tobacco up to take him to record. Got him a 5-year contract out of it. But anyway, I want to do you one that they wrote, one called the Whippoorwill Song, recorded July 25th, 1927, Bristol, Virginia. As I wandered by, the wooded rills were even shadows play. To hear the song of a whippoorwill as he sings his evening lay. Oh, this whippoorwill, his song whippoorwill, it floats whippoorwill along whippoorwill. Now brave whippoorwill, now gay whippoorwill, we hear whippoorwill, his lay whippoorwill. It brings to mind the old home so miles away, and dear old friends that I often fold against his evening lay. Oh, this whippoorwill, his song whippoorwill, it floats whippoorwill along whippoorwill. Now brave whippoorwill, now gay whippoorwill, we hear whippoorwill, his lay whippoorwill. Oldest whippoorwill, his song whippoorwill, it floats whippoorwill along whippoorwill. Now brave whippoorwill, now gay whippoorwill, we hear whippoorwill, his lay whippoorwill. I want y'all to know I got more nerve than Dick Tracy. I'll try almost anything. I wanted to do something for an instrumental that Daddy wrote. It's called Stoney's Waltz. It isn't a waltz. Anybody can tell that. It's but one ear, boy. We only had one ear that could tell it wasn't a waltz. But it's called Stoney's Waltz because Mommy, when she wasn't mad at Daddy, called him Stoney. So I figured that he figured he better hurry up and get this over with while it lasted. It's called Stoney's Waltz.
Thank you.
on overtime? How much? 5 more minutes? Well, I know y'all wasn't going to ask me nothing no way, and I ain't got nothing to tell you. So I'm going to do you another song on the auto harp. One, it was one of Mommy's favorites. Mommy played the fiddle and the banjo and everything, and she traveled with Daddy an awful lot. Her daddy, Grandpa Frost, built fiddles and banjos. If they be frank with you, he built an awful lot of banjos around there. There's a few cats that didn't have no hide left. That's the truth. Oh, who's gonna? Forgot what I was doing. Oh, it's don't let your deal go down, little girl. Don't let your deal go down. Don't let your deal go down, little girl, till your last old dollar is gone. Who's gonna shoe my pretty little foot? Who's gonna glove my hand? Who's gonna kiss my lily white cheek? Who's gonna be my man? Don't let your deal go down, little girl. Don't let your deal go down. Don't let your deal go down, little girl, till your last old dollar is gone. Your papa shoe your pretty little foot. Mama will glove your hand. No one shall kiss your lily white cheeks till I get back again. Don't let your deal go down, little girl. Don't let your deal go down. Don't let your deal go down, little girl, till your last old dollar is gone. Where did you get those high-top shoes and the dress that you're wearing so fine? I got my shoes from the railroad man and my dress from the driver in the mine. Don't let your deal go down, little girl. Don't let your deal go down. Don't let your deal go down, little girl, until your last old dollar is gone. Thank you so much. Don't make them too hard, friends. you know, you have to get me off the stage. Did somebody describe today about having a thing on wheels where you pull them away from the phone when they, you know, get too late? Well, that was the original hook. They had wheels where they put the board, you know, but you need a hook for me. So y'all, let her have it. Well, hasn't performed?
Does he perform?
No, he does not. No. And I want to ask you a question. Where did you get your belt buckle? I like that booger.
I'm not sure. It's one of these Victor things that you pick up at some of these outdoor markets.
Yeah, okay. And something else I'm going to ask you. Was you listening or asleep on me? I kind of thought you might be listening to me. Now, y'all asked me. I'm glad. I'm so glad. I enjoyed doing it. It's too bad we can't stay all day. Boy. Anybody got something you want to ask me? Lord, I come prepared. The first record I was on? I don't know. I don't remember. I really don't. When I first started playing, well, I guess about 1940s, I guess. It must have been there when Daddy started again, because I wasn't on the first ones. Daddy stopped recording after the Depression, naturally. Couldn't buy Pentos, let alone records. But in 1934, Daddy went to New York and took my oldest brother, Eddie, with him. And he was just the only one old enough to go. And we didn't record anymore until in the 50s, late 40s and 50s. So that's about the way it happened. We played all the time, but we didn't record. Nobody wanted us.
Under what name?
This Eddie and Daddy?
When you started again in the late 40s and 50s?
The Stoneman family. The Stoneman family, uh-huh. Pop Stoneman, the Stoneman family, the Stoneman Pop and the Little Pebbles. See, what it was the Stoneman family, and then as some of the kids got big enough to go on out on their own, they went, and they left Daddy standing there with the little bitty young'uns. When he was a babysitter, he took them with him. So that's how come Pop and the Little Pebbles, you know, Pop Stoneman and the Pebbles. And so we sort of, you know. Well, it was Star Day, and it was Blue Ridge, and it was Smithsonian, and the Library of Congress. You know Mike Seeger. He came out. And in fact, what started this recording all over again was Mike Seeger. We lived out in Carmel Hills, Maryland, back down the gully, like, you know. And we'd sit out and play all the time for no reason because we just nothing else to do. And Mike Seeger had heard about us. And he come out there and recorded Mommy and Daddy in the House. And that's on a Rounder album, I think. And it's pretty good. Mommy playing a mean, mean drop thumb banjo. You ought to heard that thing. She was good with it. But then it started all over again. Then we went to several record companies. I can't remember. We've been to them all of them. And let me tell you. I want to tell you how many record labels Daddy's been on. He would 24 old-time record labels like the even Herman or Herwin. We got all those things, and he was on two in-betweens like the Gulf Reef and I went out in California, and then he was on 14 current labels. So you know, Daddy was on. He stayed busy. He wasn't particular about who he picked for. Mommy used to say, Ernest Stoneman, I do believe that you'd go pay somebody to listen to you. And you know, I believe he would if he'd had the money.
Did you all, when you were a child, did you associate a lot with the other recording artists?
We didn't know any.
Family?
No, we didn't know them. We didn't know until we went to Nashville. No, we didn't know. When you have a bunch of young ones you're trying to feed, and you don't like really competition, no way across the street from you. You know what I mean? We played at a place called The Famous in Washington, D.C., and across the street from us, It was called Rocket Room, and they played hard rock loud. Man, they got loud. That's when we first started using electric on the instruments. We got louder. Yeah. Scott, my brother Scott used to say, if you can't whip them, if you can't beat them, stomp them down. Okay, I've got five brothers that passed away, the last one was last June, and the baby brother, and I got four living, but the trouble is they all got heart trouble and had surgery. It sort of happens that way. Jimmy, the bass man, you know, one of the bass, I'll be frank with you, I've never heard anybody play the bass like him. He can't do it no more because he's, you know, cut open. And my brother Gene, who was a great jazz man, I bet he would have a ball here today. He played. See, in our family, we had so many different people wanting different things. You know, so they play at the band and say, let's do, I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. And Daddy would say, that's all right, I guess, but it ain't country. And then Donna would want to do her little mandolin stuff, you know, and Ronnie said, if it ain't, you don't know where it's at, Patsy. I said, well, if I don't know where it's at, it's because I forgot where I put it. So, but then we got brothers who play jazz, and Gene is one of the best jazz men. He's a guitar collector. He's collected about 45 Martin guitars, all sizes and shapes. But he'd have a ball here today.
Do you remember much about Mike Seeger's visits to your house?
Yeah, he did. And then he came when I was in Nashville, before I moved out of Nashville. He came to my house in Nashville, and I did some Juice Harp recordings for him for this.
When was that?
About 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I played the, what it was, I didn't play anything much because I worked out, you know, day jobs and stuff like that because to help out. But when I saw Daddy was getting awful sick and wasn't going to make it very long, much longer, I decided it's time somebody picked up the alto harp. And my husband, I'd just gotten married, he bought me an alto harp and I'd learned to tune it. That's a job because I didn't have a tuner then. I tuned it to a juice harp, a D juice harp, like Daddy did. And that's one of the crosses you have to bear. But then I said, well, I play a bland banjo like Mommy. So I tried the banjo, and I've done a few recordings with the banjo. And I do the juice harp, and I do the guitar, because that's what Daddy did and Mommy. And it's the only way I was going to keep it, because the rest of the kids wanted to be sort of country, uptown country. Me, I prefer to be out in the mountain country, you know. And I don't know if anybody's got anything else they want to ask me, but my mouth won't stop.
Is the tradition carrying on of the kids?
Well, we have, I don't have any living, all mine are gone, but I have nephews and nieces. Scott's daughter plays, and Jean's daughter, who plays, he plays a jazz man, but she plays the fiddle like mommy. And Van has two sons who are great musicians and got a great voice, really. But you see, the problem of it is, when they go out, that's the reason they put this slideshow together. I thought the kids ought to know their history. They deserve better than hitting these ballrooms. And the trouble of it is, they hit the ballrooms. And when you're playing in a barroom and haven't got the money in your pocket to buy food, somebody will walk up and say, you want a drink, but never do you want a sandwich. So you end up being a little bit too much in the bottle, but that's what happens, and I didn't want to fool with it no more. I'm being honest with y'all. My name is Honest. You want to say, how about you back there? You look like you got your, I see you. Oh, yeah. Not unless I sit and talk to the floor or whatever. I tell you what happened. I was a little bit worried that the Stoneman music wouldn't be heard much anymore. So my husband was out of town, and he had a beautiful Cadillac, and I didn't have the money. And I wanted to buy some airtime or radio time. So I pulled his Cadillac, pretty thing, out in the front yard and sold it, and bought airtime for the radio show out in the, what is it, out in Smyrna, outside of Nashville. So I bought, the agreement was I would do a radio show for 2 years, and in the process I would also get an album from his studio, which I did, our latest album, the last thing Van was on. But because I had Daddy's cylinders and I have cylinder player, I really made people listen. I played Stoneman music all the way through that hour show every day. But I took my cylinder player and sat down on the thing and put the microphones around it, and I played cylinders for an hour. And people called in and say, what is that you're doing? I say, if you haven't heard it by now, you're going to hear it again. But I explained to them what it was. I played cylinders over the air, and they turned out pretty good. Yeah. Is there anything else anybody wants to know? Want me to leave? Yeah. That.
when the kids in your family are born, or your families, I guess as soon as they're able to stand up, they've probably got an instrument.
Yeah, well, Ronnie was on stage in Las Vegas at the Mint, and Landmark, I guess it was. Anyway, Ronnie was about 7-8 months pregnant. And, of course, holding the banjo and everything, you couldn't tell it too much because she's skinny as a rail anyway. But anyway, I think that young was hanging every time she hit a note. I must have been hanging on to the ribs. So I can say, tell you this much, they heard it before they got here. Thank you so much.
Okay.
She wanted to do it this year.
Oh, I mean, in addition.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll bring Donna and all those cool pictures for you.
That would be fun.
Tell about the deal at the Edison site.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Patsy's going to be the next Edison recording artist.
70 years after Daddy did.
Yeah, she's traveling up to New Jersey, where I work, to the Edison Laboratory, and we're going to record her on Wax Cylinder on Saturday, May 18th. And it's open to the public if anybody is in the area. Yeah, it's in the ARSC newsletter.